Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, we're going to hear from mental health expert Tammy Whalen. Tell me a little bit about your background in mental health work.
I have worked with the Canadian Mental Health Association for the past 8 years. My role here is an adult educator, and I am certified to run mental health training in the community.
So would this include things like breaking the barriers and the myths surrounding things like mental health and what its real impact is?
Absolutely. I talk about this on a daily basis. No matter where I deliver a presentation or a workshop, we talk about stigma, we talk about awareness, and we talk about essentially how to have a conversation with individuals who are living with a mental illness or are experiencing a mental health problem.
So would that include things like speaking to an employer about disclosing a mental illness, because there is still a lot of stigma and a lot of myths and misperceptions surrounding this, and in a workplace situation that can be especially difficult?
Yeah, absolutely. Individuals, number one, don't necessarily have to disclose their illness to their employer. However, the more the information that the employer knows, the more that they can help or help accommodate the person. It's just difficult because individuals have been sitting with that stigma and even that self-stigma for a very long time. People are afraid to be judged. The stat is right now that 2 in 3 people fear, sit in silence because they fear judgment and they fear rejection. Because if we think about the words that our society uses to describe someone who is mentally ill or not well, they throw around words that aren't kind. I mean, we talk about crazy, we talk about psycho, unstable, not well. Who wants to be deemed or put in that category?
So what sorts of things would you recommend in a conversation to help get around or avoid use of these terms?
Well, when we do our presentations in the community and we are out there every day of the week, we talk about, the first thing we do is we talk about the words and the negative impact. And having said that, trying to be empathetic and put yourself in this person's shoes. And I think that's the hardest part ever, is we don't realize what this individual is going through. We're not being empathetic. We're not understanding that they're going through a tough time. So it's, for us, we talk about language and how important language truly does matter. Aside from language is educating yourself, get to know information. My favorite saying is we don't know what we don't know. So if someone is experiencing or just diagnosed with cancer, for example, they're going to look into it. They're going to find out as much possible about the cancer, to help themselves, to help them through the recovery, to support a family member. The same sort of work needs to be done if someone is struggling with their mental health or with a mental disorder. So education is key, language is key, being empathetic. And I think the biggest thing would be not to judge. We're so quick as human beings to judge people, to put people in boxes. Yet, if we take 2 seconds to realize or remember that this could easily be one of us, personally, I think things would change. People's attitudes would change.
So, in your time working with mental health patients, has there been any one success moment that stands out for you?
Success?
Yes.
All the time. So I don't see patients per se. I see about 5,000 to 5,500 people a year in my workshops and trainings. So I go out to schools, agencies, churches, businesses, corporations, anyone who essentially wants to learn about mental health and anyone who wants to be an advocate for mental health in their workplace or to change a conversation at schools, those would be my clients. So the 5,000 plus people a year in terms of successes, I think the best feeling in the world for me is knowing that after an hour or a full day workshop, you know, someone coming to me to say, you know, this workshop has changed my life. I remember the first time someone said that to me, and I truly didn't understand it. But now I know that that conversation was opening a door for that individual, right? And there are times where I have met someone perhaps 8 years ago, and they have come back to me to say, you know, life is good because I have followed these steps. Another success for me on a regular basis, which is nice, is we do suicide intervention training at a lot of businesses, a lot of agencies, and schools. And I think one of the best things is when I get an email from someone a week after they've done the suicide intervention training, and they say something like, guess what, Cammie? You wouldn't believe it, but just after the workshop, I did a suicide intervention, and I followed the steps, and this person is safe. And then they thank us, which is an amazing feeling. It's very rewarding.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In the next segment of our show, we're going to do something a little holiday-themed. Have you ever wondered what the impact of the shoeboxes sent overseas to all the boys and girls living in poverty might be? I think there could be a great mental health impact in so much as draw them out of a place of hopelessness and enrich their lives as part of the community. And to talk about that and the accessibility of the areas they're going to, Shane Davis from Lakeshore St. Andrew's Church. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the mental health impact for these kids getting the shoe boxes.
Sure. So, I think the biggest thing about the shoe boxes and what they represent is hope. And so anytime that hope is a factor, I mean, it cheers people up mentally, physically. There's just an excitement. And I mean, a practical aspect too, is sometimes there's nourishment and stuff that comes with those boxes as well. So even health-wise, it puts the kids in a better place and just changes their attitudes or their moods or their situation. So it gives them some sense of belonging, some sense that somebody cares about them, somebody that they will likely never meet. And so it just makes them feel cared for, and that changes your mindset completely.
So if these kids are living in a situation, as you say, that's essentially hopeless, it would tend to lead to things like sense of no expectations about the future, depression, that sort of thing. And these boxes might tend to move them out of that sense and allow them to feel just as part of the community.
Yeah, I mean, like, along that future line, you know, many of them die from preventable diseases to us. And so the fact that, you know, they can start actually thinking about a future. And, I mean, some of the popular things that are sent are school supplies so that, you know, they can go to the school and have the necessities there. There's hygiene supplies so they can actually begin to take care of themselves. And there's education that comes with those hygiene supplies. How do you properly take care of yourself, you know, to lessen the chance of disease or sickness from spreading? So, I mean, there's a lot of, it's not just the box, it's the people that are delivering the boxes as well that also bring that sense.
So if you could send any one message to the community about why projects like this exist and why they matter, what would you say?
Sure. So, I mean, LSA, like we sent 515 boxes this year, and I think there's two big parts. I think that there's, on the mental health aspect, there's some depression sometimes that comes with Christmas time that people have had loss or whatever else. And I think even for us in this community, it's helpful to think outside of ourselves. And so even filling a box and getting involved with a project like this and knowing that you're going to be helping somebody who is in need can even increase the mental health here. And then the flip side is that when you partner with such a big organization like Samaritan's Purse, they go into these communities with these boxes, and yes, they're bringing hope, but they're also bringing, you know, Jesus, which we believe is even greater than hope in these situations. And so they're going into those communities and giving these boxes and spending time with them. They're also evaluating what needs those communities need, because some of them are greater need a bigger picture than just a shoebox coming. Some of them have some real serious needs, and so they can go in there, and then we get feedback again of, okay, here's the serious needs in these communities. So it's just a snowball effect of something, you know, so simple as going to a Dollarama, filling a box, sending it to a child in need, and at the end of the day, you could be helping an entire community.
So, for the church itself, do you think they'll continue to partner in this way to continue to make change happen?
Yeah, I know we will. I mean, one of the things I love about LSA is our willingness to help, our willingness to be connected into these kinds of projects. And sometimes projects fall into our lap that, you know, a few years ago when the neighborhood was flooded and Samaritan's Purse, who did that, came here and helped us kind of set up shop and just even in our local community start helping people. And a lot of people were struggling because there was mental health issues in some of those homes that got affected by the flooding and didn't have the resources or you know, the manpower themselves to be able to fix that stuff. And so for this church to be able to partner with, you know, organizations like that to get that stuff done is awesome.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Lance Student News is back. We're online at uwindsorlance.com, and we're here to stay. Keep connected to campus with event listings, sports, arts and culture, and politics news. Find CJAM FM's charts, too. Have something to say? Want to write for The Lance? Hit us up at editorthelance@gmail.com and follow us on social media at The Lance News. The Lance Student News, the official University of Windsor student news source you probably didn't know existed.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from mental health expert Tammy Whalen and from Shane Davis from Lakeshore St. Andrew's Church. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the Bob Rumbel Center.
Well, we're in a pretty exciting time right now, Cameron. We've just recently amalgamated. So formerly we were the Bob Rumbel Center for the Deaf in Toronto and the Bob Rumbel Associations for the Deaf in Milton, Halton area. We received some funding from what was known then as the Ministry of Community and Social Services, and to execute an amalgamation to kind of bring our operations together. So we did that over the last couple of years, and sort of built a new foundation for us to really move ahead in reaching out to the deaf community and filling some of those gaps that exist for them.
So what are some of the biggest gaps?
Some of the biggest gaps, I would say the biggest gap is mental health services for the deaf. It's something that, you know, I mean, it's available to mainstream, community members, but bring in the, you know, need for interpretation, the understanding of culture and language, and that makes it challenging for mainstream clinics to be able to support the needs of the deaf community. So that's something that we're extremely interested in forging ahead with. We do have a children and youth mental health program that's located in Milton on the property of E.C. Drury School for the Deaf, which is a provincial school that exists for deaf kids. And we serve kids from 0 to 21 if they're still attending school. Unfortunately, our funding really limits us to the catchment area, so it's really limited to kids that attend the school or that live sort of in the general area. So it could be Milton, Halton Hills, Guelph, Wellington, and Peel region. So we'd really like to expand that service provincially and also reach out to the adult population as well.
So in your time with Bob Rumbel Center, has there been any one success moment that stands out for you?
Well, yes, there's been quite a number of them. I mean, anything down, seeing an individual who, you know, maybe couldn't participate in an art program for various reasons, you know, suddenly has an interest and has some attention to the program and really actually is getting some therapeutic value out of it. So that's, you know, that's on an individual level, but on an organizational level, about 5 years ago, we established a social enterprise called The Range, and it is a driving range, and it's located in Milton, just at Highway 25, north of the 401. And we've employed quite a number of deaf individuals with a developmental disability. And through that experience that they've gained, whether it be working on cash or, you know, working out in the field, actually on the driving range, customer service, those types of transferable skills have allowed some of the people to kind of graduate from that those positions to and move into the community into other work opportunities. So it's just been a really wonderful thing for us and for the people we support.
So what are the next immediate steps going forward with the amalgamation?
With the amalgamation, well, we've really kind of streamlined our sort of backroom services. Our, you know, we had HR and finance and administration in Toronto, and we also duplicated that in Milton. So we've sort of found some efficiencies along the way, and we're really in the process of executing a strategic plan to make the most of those efficiencies in terms of offering more choice to the people that we support, enriching our programs, and we also have coming up in the very near future, we're going to be having a build with Habitat for Humanity. So that is very exciting for us. We are expecting to build approximately 10 apartments. So, and those will be for the people that we support. You know, most of the people that we support are on ODSP, Ontario Disability Support. And so, you know, it's not an ideal time to be looking for housing. It's so expensive in the GTA. So this will be very helpful. We're grateful for Habitat to engage with us in this project, and we expect that to come to fruition in the next year or two.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure will.
So tell me a little bit about the Easter Seals Webathon.
Well, the Webathon is brand new. 2018 is the first year for it. A lot of Windsorites know about Easter Seals because of our telethon that we have in the spring every year. And so the Easter Seals Webathon being like the next natural step. We all know what an awesome town Windsor is. I mean, our entrepreneurs are such hard workers, and yet still, they're so generous. They see how important it is for us to grow as a community and be there for each other. And so many of them were willing to get on board and help out the Webathon, which is what's really exciting. So it started on Monday, on the 26th, and it goes right through until Friday the 30th. And we are introducing these entrepreneurs through video on social media. We get to learn about them, learn about their business and the difference that they're making here in Windsor Essex. And they've donated some great goodies to our online auction. We have a lot of stuff that you can shop in right before the holidays too, which is perfect. Like Ted Farron's Gourmet Butcher Shop, for example, they've donated this fantastic holiday feast with like a big fresh turkey, ham, roasting pan, stuffing, meat thermometer, that kind of thing, worth over $200, and you can bid on that in our online auction. We have gift certificates from Arcata Pizza, for example. Green Envy donated a very attractive tote bag and lipstick that are eco-friendly and cruelty-free. We have handcrafted silver jewelry from Ring Weavers. Border City Style donated a Rum Runner's watch to our online auction. It's really cool. It's designed and made by Jonathan. He's a local guy who was inspired by the Prohibition era. And that watch is worth over $400, and you can bid on it during our auction. We also have the Harvest Table, Chow Cafe, Heads Up Trainer, Tagged It Paper Company, Solomon Financial, Embrace Rec, Hawkins Accounting, and a whole bunch more that are all a part of the Webathon. And so they all have their videos online. They've all donated to the auction, which you can shop during this week until Friday at 5 p.m., either for some gifts or for spoiling yourself.
So will this be similar to the telethon? And if so, in what ways are you looking to make it similar, different?
It's not necessarily similar to the telethon. The telethon is a big one-day event that airs live on CTV and WeTV. That happens every spring. We've had it for almost 40 years now. And that's where a bunch of businesses come in, and we talk to the community. We get to meet Easter Seals ambassadors, too, and find out about how their life has been positively affected by the generosity of Windsorites. The Webathon is really its own individual event that is helping out business owners just as much as they are helping out. It's actually really cool. There's an opportunity for Windsorites to pay it forward and help out these businesses. BizX, the Windsor Star, and Mix 96 are offering promotional packages to our top fundraising businesses. So each business has their own fundraising page that you can find on their socials like Facebook or Instagram, and then you can donate to Easter Seals through them. So not only are you helping out kids with physical disabilities, but you're helping out your favorite local businesses by giving them a big marketing boost.
So what sort of success do you anticipate from the Webathon?
Oh, well, we are already seeing a lot of success. I've got to meet and build relationships with great business owners, and they have all donated to Easter Seals Kids, which is fantastic. And it's nice that this is an opportunity for Windsorites to shop local. I mean, it's good timing now that the weather is turning. You can still promote and help out local businesses while staying warm and cozy on your couch. You can spend a little extra time on Facebook and Instagram now, become well acquainted with our local businesses, and help out local families and kids across Ontario at the same time. So it's a great way to have a positive local impact this season.
So have there been any challenges in putting it together?
I would say the biggest challenge is that it is the first time for such an event. And so a lot of businesses were apprehensive in taking part. So it's nice to know that they're going to be watching the Webathon. They're going to be supporting their fellow Windsor businesses by bidding on the auction and helping promote it as well. But I would say that was the biggest obstacle, was they wanted to see how it goes this year before they join us next year.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
It's kind of funny, my friends. This time of year in particular, it's all about being there, being that voice of support and understanding in your community. No matter what you believe, what your background is, we can all agree that there is a need for there to be more humanity in the world. We can all understand that people, particularly those with disabilities, need just that little extra compassion. It's a great thing to see this time of year, but truly, I'd like to see more done throughout the year to recognize that there are housing needs, employment needs, just better access needs for all people, not just those with disabilities. What Karen was saying about the housing complex that they're going to be building, it's just amazing to recognize someone might not be able to afford the appropriate housing facility. So we'll build it for them. It's this time of year that brings out the best in people like that. Whether they have a mental health problem, whether it be a hearing loss, a physical disability, no matter what it is, the need for this sort of compassion and understanding remains. It's just a wonderful thing to see that, particularly at this time of year, people come together and no matter what financial situation they might be in, they give their best to these. A lot of them are smaller organizations. They give their best resources to keep them running, to keep them providing the services that are so vital in this community. It's a time to step outside ourselves and to say, others matter. And in the weeks ahead, you're going to hear quite a lot about disability holiday traditions and various programs and services that do exist to provide the appropriate opportunities. But fact is, we as a people need to always keep it in our minds that no matter what time of year it is, the equality and the respect that a human being is entitled to is always a part of us. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.